Good morning. You're on the air. This is Knighton Radio. Who's calling?
Good morning. It's Mick Bates. How's things?
Oh, I'm doing. Hold on a second here.
Hey, Mick.
Let me turn you up a little bit, buddy. Hold on a second here. There you go.
JD. Good morning, Mick.
Can you hear us okay?
Good. Happy Easter.
Happy Good Friday.
Yeah. Well,
yes.
It's supposed to be Easter weekend.
Is it supposed to be happy on Good Friday?
It's kind of a paradox, really, the whole thing.
But, yeah.
But there's a beautiful day down here in Beckley, and I think it'll be a nice weekend, so looking forward to it.
So you took some time off from your busy schedule to join us this morning?
Yeah, not too much. What people don't realize is that we're a part-time legislature, so for 60 days we're gone from our businesses and our families. And,
right.
So I came back and jumped right back into it. So I've been at work seeing patients all week and got back into the swing of things and try to monitor what's going on in Charleston and plan for what comes next.
So, yeah, I wanted to ask you because I never have before. When you, I guess from what I hear, you're from Australia.
Yeah, it's sort of a more by good luck than good management. I find myself here in West Virginia. I grew up in Australia, was educated in Australia, came here as a young man. I was 21 and started in Michigan, was in Florida, Texas, and on the way Indiana.
Wow,
Kentucky, a 3-month work assignment here in West Virginia, and that was 24 years ago. So Beckley adopted me, and I adopted Beckley, and it's been a great thing. So I love it here.
So did you go to school here, or is that what brought you here?
No, in Australia. I'm a physical therapist, and there was a great shortage of people back in the early 90s
to
work in the profession. And, so I was a locum. I worked all over the country. And
that's fantastic.
I guess here in West Virginia.
That's great to have a job where you can go anywhere.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I could live anywhere in the world. I choose to live here, and it's a great place.
That gives you a lot of freedom.
Family.
That's a lot of freedom.
Yeah, so love what I do. Love what I do on a daily basis.
Well, I work as a registered lobbyist in Charleston, and I wasn't down there that much because I didn't have a lot of legislative problems to deal with like you did.
Wrong.
I mean, I actually missed 3 weeks this year, and I've never done that. I've always been there just about every day, And I couldn't believe, it was easy on me, but I know it wasn't easy on you.
No, I mean, it was just, quite frankly, it was a lot of nothing going on. So it wasn't what I call a particularly productive 60 days. So we didn't really deliver on the things that we needed to deliver on. So
what do you project is going to happen here going forward?
Yesterday the government vetoed the budget, so we're back to square one. And, people say that, we're not on the same page. We're not even the same book. So there's really no consensus. So there's no agreement anywhere between the two sides of the dome and the governor's office in terms of how we move forward. We've got significant financial challenges here in West Virginia. The budget that was passed was a fictional document, really wasn't balanced, used a bunch of one-time money, was structurally unsound, was $30 million worth of money that wasn't even there. So we really had no choice but to veto it. But now it's a question of, okay, can we get some sort of consensus? I think there's 77 days to go before the end of the fiscal year.
Right.
That's what worries me, is that I think we're on a slow march towards a government shutdown.
And a government shutdown, how would that work exactly?
Well, we really don't know. It's uncharted territory. We don't have anything on the books right now as far as furloughs. That's the other issue. So there are some legal people. There's some of the attorneys looking at it and saying, okay, what's essential services? What's on the books to allow us? Can we pay bills? Clearly they're not going to let the prisons' doors open but all the non-essential services would basically cease,
right?
Because there's no way to be able to pay people. There's no way for us to be operate without a budget.
What about the hospitals?
Yeah, that'd be another area. I mean, critical care situations. The state hospitals, those sorts of situations. I'm sure there'd be something in place to take care of those things. But non-essential services, I think. May eventually come to an end, but again, it's uncharted territory. We really don't know, and hopefully we won't get there, but I'm a little optimistic, to be honest. We got to June 14th last year.
Yeah.
It was an easy task last year.
Now, now that the governor's vetoed, which I applaud him for, I mean, his use of props was pretty incredible from what I hear.
quite colorful, so to say the least. But,
and you know, and
he knows how to make a point,
right? And but the legislature can't override the veto, right?
It can be, but you need 2/3 of both bodies.
All right, 2/3. They won't. He won't have that. No.
No. So but, simple majority for a regular bill is 2/3 on the budget bill.
Right. Okay.
So, and they really can't, bro, because as I said before, the budget is structurally unsound. It's a fictional document. The effective date, we had no choice. The effective date was July 9th because they couldn't move the effective date. Because we dealt with the issue so late in the session and we started late, they had to move the effective date up, which they weren't able to do. So the budget document itself doesn't start until July 9th.
Right.
There's a $30 million hole in the thing because of the legislation that didn't pass. So it wasn't a real budget. It was put together at the last minute because they had to pass something so they could declare victory.
Yeah.
There's $200 million that come out of Medicaid. $50 million worth of state money.
Jeez.
$100 million worth of federal money.
Robbing Peter to pay Paul.
It just doesn't work.
I mean, yeah.
You either do things like shut down these waiver programs or just basically stop paying hospitals and doctors and nursing homes and this stuff's just not going to happen.
All right, let me ask you another question. Based on that. Okay, so we have a faction in the Trump movement that I'll use Mr. Bannon as the example, that wants to basically burn it all down, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And that start from scratch, you know, just get rid of everything since Roosevelt, basically. And now, how strong is that tendency? I know that's not all Republicans, but how strong is that tendency in the West Virginia Republican faction in the legislature? And even if it's a minority, is it strong enough to force a shutdown? I mean, if that's the way they decide to go?
It is. I mean, and really, a lot of the same dynamics you see in D.C. are going on here in West Virginia. It's not maybe quite in terms of numbers, but just the balance right now in the House in particular is that they can't move anything of significance. I mean, with the number of votes that we had that were passed 52-48, I mean, they have a supermajority, but they don't have a supermajority in terms of those that are prepared to follow leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So on any issue, there's about 20 that will break one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And not all of them are for ideological reasons. So, so it's a really strange dynamic. But kind of, there are people there that think all taxes are bad.
Mm-hmm.
No tax can be increased. That all government is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Government is some abstract thing. It's not people. It's not schools. It's not state troopers. It's not teachers. It's just government. And it's very hard to. You can't reason with the unreasonable. Everything's black or white, and compromise is not something that comes easy when you're dealing with that kind of group.
Tell us a little bit about your personal escapades at the legislature almost on a daily basis, reminding the speaker of his obligation.
Well, I mean, I lived through this nightmare last year, and I went down there. I mean, this is my second term, third year, fifth budget, if you count the two fictional ones we passed and been vetoed. And I really tried to focus on that issue, and you know, I always felt that if you can understand the money, you can understand the issue.
Absolutely.
So I started my legislative service with that as a focus, and it is complicated. I mean, you're talking about, you know, $12 billion worth of revenue if you add in all the federal dollars. There's a lot of moving parts. And few understand it well. So, and I would say that the majority of the people that are in the chamber don't understand it well. We knew we had a problem. We knew we had a problem last year. We knew we had a problem when we left town. And so I walked in the door saying, we need to get this done and get this done first. I heard continually from the people back home is that that's what they wanted us to focus on. Get this budget thing done. Do something about the roads, put some people to work, and deal with the drug problem. Mm-hmm. And we just were dealing with all this other stuff. I mean, it's just it's frustrating when the focus isn't where it needs to be.
That's right. And the whole reason we're in this situation that we find ourselves is because of money in politics. You know, unlimited amounts of third-party money going to these candidates. They don't have to raise money from their constituents. They get a check mailed in from ALEC and the Koch brothers and all these other groups, as Citizens for Prosperity or whatever the heck those guys are. They even have more money than the Republicans.
Yeah. It was a real eye-opener to me when I got down there and started how much non-West Virginia issues were driving the West Virginia agenda.
Right. Well, they just want to keep us as a sacrifice zone.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
we've always been, unfortunately, it's been that way for a long, long time. And, those that are in control right now have an agenda that isn't necessarily the agenda of the people that they represent. So.
But how do you think we get the word out so that, you know, people that don't want to even, people that have stayed out of the mess, you know, they just go about their daily routine. They don't vote. They don't read the paper. How are we supposed to organize these folks? It's like organizing cats so that we can change this.
Yeah, I think unfortunately it's going to have to impact them in their daily lives.
Right.
Sometimes people, you have to feel it before they're motivated to change and to get involved.
And we see people walking on the side of the road, right? We see them every day because we don't have sidewalks in West Virginia. So you see people walking on the side of the road and they look downtrodden. That, you know, their clothes are not the latest clothes. They're not even clean. You know, a lot of times they got holes in them and their shoes are untidy and they're holding a bag. They're holding like a plastic bag. They look like hobos. You know, you see them all over the state. I see them. And you wonder, you know, how do we organize these people to become productive citizens? They just seem like they're in so much despair that there's no hope.
No, and there is a hopelessness that goes. That's sort of a it's always, things have always been this way, and they're always going to be this way. And you know, I think that's some of what is intriguing about Jim Justice is that he says it doesn't have to be this way.
Yeah, he's got empathy.
We don't have to be, we can be different, we can be better, things can be improved, and I think that's why you see people that are sort of turning towards him and are prepared to take a chance. I mean, on some of the proposals, pretty bold stuff. I mean, he's got this road building plan that he's laid out. I mean, it's an opportunity for us to really jumpstart this economy and put people to work.
Well, now where would the roads go? Where would the roads be going?
There's both the maintenance. So the repair, which we certainly know we need to do that, but also new infrastructure. There are $2 billion worth of projects on the 6-year plan that we don't have funding for. So there'll be priority areas, but they're spread all across the state, and we have to be able to fund that plan. So, we're talking about $1.6 billion worth of work. The payroll taxes on that alone is $250 million.
I mean, wow.
We can fix our own, a good portion of our own budget problem by working on the infrastructure that is needed here in West Virginia to be able to make this an attractive place for people to want to come and live and work and for us to prosper. You know, right now we're just sort of spiraling down, and
we're losing population.
You've got to do something bold, and simply to cut away at things that we don't have enough of to start with isn't a sacrifice, way to be successful. I mean, I can, in my business, I can go ahead and if I've got a problem with revenue, I can go ahead and fix that real quick. I just quit cleaning the building and lay the lady off at the front desk. I mean, how smart's that? I mean, I'm not going to have a viable business.
Well, we really appreciate you calling in, Mick, and we want you to come back. I know you're busy and you got to get back to work, but appreciate the call.
Mick.
And we want you to be a regular.
Very interesting insight you got there. By the way, just one last question. Your constituents, okay? What are you hearing in terms of feedback from your constituents, either about the state or the national scene?
The and I'm see people every day that, that while I'm working come up to me, and first of all, they're very grateful for my service individually, but very frustrated with the fact that, you know, that we're where we're at. They want this done. They want things taken care of. They don't care about the politics of things. They're the R's or the D's. They just want us to get a solution and deal with these problems. So there's a growing sense of anger within the people I talk to that we're failing to do our job. So, you know, if, to the extent that motivates people to get out there and get involved and and take that to the electorate, then I think that's a good thing. But, you know, there's a lot still to happen here over the next 78 days as we try to get a solution.
Seven or eight? Or
78.
Oh, 78.
Yeah.
Oh, that's until the the showdown deadline,
yeah.
Right?
So no word yet on terms of when the special session will be. I think it will be later as opposed to earlier. I think that they'll try to get agreement before they bring us back down. So if I find something else out, then I'll be sure to let people know, and look forward to coming back on and talking to you again.
All right.
Great.
Thanks.
Fantastic.
A lot,
thanks
all right,
again.
Buddy.
Have a happy Easter.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Ben. Bye-bye.
Right.
Yep. You're listening to the Labor Beat Radio on www.enlightenradio.org, and my good friend and host here, J.B. Christensen, is he's looking good today. Actually, it's Easter weekend. It must
but
be.
But you know
you
why?
You have a granddaughter. You have a great granddaughter.
Yeah. I mean, ever since that moment,
you've just been glowing, huh?
And that was Maundy Thursday when I got to hold her for the first time. You know,
practically the Last Supper. I mean,
I'm
if
telling
not,
you, man.
If not, in fact, the Last Supper.
And then we went out and had the best time ever. I encourage all our listeners to go to Baltimore and check it out. It's unbelievable. East Baltimore is alive.
Wow.
It's
alive.
I mean, it is hip.
All right.
There's plenty to do, plenty to see. You can walk around. You know, you don't have to worry about getting mugged or anything. I mean, it's just a really safe and very prosperous neighborhood. You can tell that. You know, the investment money has really poured into that part of Baltimore.
Well, that's good. I'm glad they got a little bit of revival. You
right.
know, of some kind.
Oh, and the one thing I wanted to mention, John, you'll get a kick out of this. Everybody has to go visit the bathroom. So they said, where's the bathroom? Go up down the hall to the right. A metrosexual bathroom.
Oh, a metrosexual bathroom.
Yeah, baby.
Okay.
Yeah. And no men's and women's. This is men and women.
They've got the whole thing down. Right?
And yeah. I walked in on this this lady, and she goes, oh, that's what it, you know, she didn't realize that's what it was. And she was telling all her friends, and, it, you know, it was just, it's something that you don't see very much of. I mean, Shepherdstown, you see it at the Town Run because they were one of the first ones in West Virginia probably to do that.
Maybe,
you know,
yeah.
They have a open bathroom.
I saw it down in D.C. when we were at the Women's March. And that one. Remember that little restaurant we went into?
Yeah, that's right.
Right in there.
There you go.
They were.
Yeah. So. That was a great day. Are you going to the Climate March or the Science March?
Is that in New York?
No, it's here, D.C.
When is it, next weekend?
The 29th.
Yeah, I'm going to try to go.
It's 2 weeks.
Keep reminding me, okay?
Yeah, because we might. Let's go together.
Guess where I'm going today.
D.C.?
Yeah.
Where? To see the game?
Nationals game, yeah.
Oh, man, high five on that. I love the Nationals. You know, the Nats, the Orioles, they both look fantastic this year.
I know we went to the game that got half rained out, you know, last Thursday, and
a little chilly too.
It was just so tough. So many men left on base.
Yeah,
I was a little, you know, disappointed because we should have won that game. We were doing better in the beginning, and our pitcher was holding up. Jose or Gonzalez, is that his name?
Yeah,
he was okay. He was doing good.
Gio.
Yeah, Gio. Right. Okay.
But what a team. I mean, you know, they managed to lose a few good players, but they managed to build up every time. You know, whoever's running the Washington Nationals and the Orioles, you know, I have to give credit to them too. They have done a really good job of replacing the ones they've lost. You know, the ones that have moved on and got bigger contracts.
Yeah. Well,
but,
okay,
you know,
I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is, and it's good baseball and it's good apple pie. You know, here we are distracted by sports again while our president is dropping bombs.
He's burning the whole country. He's burning the world down.
He's spending money like a drunken sailor. And,
well,
you know,
he's going to be – there's going to be a little comeuppance here. Nothing was ever more certain in my life than this guy is going to get a terrible comeuppance. And but guess who's going to pay the price for his crimes?
Yep. But when they look at this disaster, you know, after he's gone, which hopefully will be fairly soon, you know, I think these things take a long time, or maybe he'll resign. But when they do an accounting of the money that he's spending and the time he's spending on the golf course, and you know, they have a place for him to go right in Maryland called Camp David. I don't think he's been there once.
You're probably not. It's not classy enough for him.
No, it's in the mountains. He doesn't like trees.
Whatever, I guess.
He doesn't. He likes beaches. He likes and palm tree. He likes palm trees. But I don't know. But
man.
I mean,
now you're depressing me now.
No, I'm serious, man.
I was feeling pretty good when we were talking to.
Everything's turned upside down.
It's all.
Sean Fluardi's going to call in. Also, we're waiting on Jesse.
Okay, you want me to play a little tune while we?
No, we can.
You
want to
go blather? Okay. Yeah. I got a thing
because somebody's going to call in any second.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's see.
And I also wanted to talk on Facebook. Our good friend Bob Kincaid, who's been on the show, he has a show down in Beckley, right near Beckley, and he's a mountaintop removal opponent, and he talks about Moab. And the fact that he says people that live near mountaintop removal greeted the news with a yawn.
Yeah.
23,000 pounds of high explosive? Psh. That's just a pissant blast in Appalachia. Call me back when they're dropping 55 per day, like the coal companies do in West Virginia. So they actually do that already.
Yeah.
The tonnage.
While you're waiting here, I want to Paul Krugman, who I don't agree with about some things, but he has an excellent op-ed this morning on the new Trump health care proposal. Okay, which is, we thought he was going to go away when we beat it last couple weeks, but now it's back. 3 weeks have passed since the Trump care debacle. After 8 years spent denouncing the Affordable Care Act, the GOP finally found itself in a position to do what it had promised and deliver something better, but of course it couldn't. And Republicans, Trump very much included, had nobody but themselves to blame. Mr. Trump promised health care would be far less expensive and far better. All he and his allies had to offer, however, are surging premiums, high out-of-pocket expenses, and mass loss of coverage. But Mr. Trump, as you have noticed, isn't big on accepting responsibility for failure. Instead, he's decided to blame Democrats for not cooperating in their destruction of the proudest achievement in decades. And on Wednesday, in an interview with the Wall Street Journal, he openly threatened to sabotage health care for millions if the opposition party doesn't want to give him what he wants. What makes you think that openly threatening the Democrats in Congress is going to get you what you want? What is it? He's threatening you, and there what? You're just going to sit there and bend over for him or something? Or what? Really? I don't think so. You know, I mean, it's a stupid political tactic. I mean, maybe it works in a boardroom where you're trying to buy a company and there's only two ways to go, you know, either sell out or go broke. But I mean, the government doesn't ever have to go broke, actually. And so that's not there. There's no compulsion. Certainly not constitutional. This says the Congress has to agree to anything the president says. Anyway.
Wow,
he's
and what about his spokesperson Sean Spicer? That guy is just he's a nut.
No, he's just there. He's
not real smart.
Look, if you wanted to stop people criticizing you for what you said, suppose you hired a gazelle. I mean a giraffe to go do your press conferences from then forth.
Okay. A giraffe. I love like Toys R Us.
Yeah. And so every day a giraffe stands in front of the press corps and chews some cud while you're asking him questions. And you get outraged. Good morning. This is Enlightened Radio and you're on the radio. Who's calling?
It's Jesse. I'm calling.
Oh, Jesse. How you doing, buddy? How you doing?
10 a.m.
Yes. You're right on the money. By the way, while you're on the phone, we may get another call that lasts for about 3 or 4 minutes about what's happening in Shepherdstown on Easter weekend. So just want you to know that in case that comes in, well, you can share that little moment with us. Okay.
Get Sean Fluardi also.
Yeah, then we might have just a regular bar room here of
one of your buddies there. Sean.
I would open up a beer right now for a matter of fact and just keep.
It is Good Friday.
I mean, there's a. Do they have communion on Friday? On Good Friday,
yeah.
They do.
Oh,
mostly. Yeah.
We're gonna have the whole service. I believe
so they might actually. Yeah. If you had it twice, you could take two. That's like a solid drink of wine.
Yeah. What are you doing?
And consecrated as well.
What are you up to, Jess?
I'm celebrating the fact that the people of West Virginia have spoken, and
right.
We're in a new reopening, a new era here.
This is on the cannabis bill too, and on a couple. Well, there's that, and the rest of the budget proposal from the Republicans looks like it. You're trying to get on a train, and so I thought I didn't need to have a ticket.
And how many times did you tell them that we need the money now? Did you tell them that?
Yeah.
Oh, certainly. But we're I'm very happy with bringing people together and getting them empowered again.
I mean, right. Great achievement.
That the Capitol has been the domain of Alec and the high powered, high paid lobbyists for far too long. And what we achieved with a public outcry that's larger than anything that anyone there can ever remember, and we did it in a Republican bicameral legislature and the heart and soul of Trump country, state that went for Trump more than any other place,
mm-hmm.
and the buckle of the Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it all with no money, and in the process, we really shut down the oil and gas lobby and the pharmaceutical lobby. They were furious with us because they were focused on the bills that they didn't want, and we drew focus, and so
good for you.
We were able to pull off
A victory. Well, I mean, in this environment, man, it's actually stunning what you guys did. I mean, really. I hope you write it up in some kind of way where even for everybody else that's looking for how to get their issues, moving a little bit, maybe they could get a little bit of tactical or inspiration from the narrative that you could tell, Jesse. I think that would be a big help. Okay, just. A little concrete example.
I'm writing up a little piece right now that'll be in West Virginia Executive. I'm hoping that they do a larger feature on it. We're getting a lot of attention from all over the country. While I was up there, the new head of ACLU in West Virginia was very excited.
He's Joe Cohen. Is that Joseph Cohen?
What
is that, Joe Cohen?
What we were doing,
yeah.
And they were just they were kind of everyone was riveted at that time, and at that point we were still in the throes, of making it happen, and it's nothing short of miraculous, but it's it's really a return to our roots as a people in this state. We're born of rebellion, and we've led all the great rebellions that changed things for the workers and for the regular folks of this country for 100 years.
That's true.
And,
good point.
So they've what they didn't realize the opposition is that they helped to awaken a sleeping giant, and I don't think there's going to be any turning back from this.
Jerry Brown, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, it was right after Trump got inaugurated, I think. He gave a speech. He was giving it to the geophysical survey, the people, scientists involved in climate change, basically. And, he was talking to them about when you can defeat a just bad politics, right? In other words, and he says that the key, it was interesting, he said the key is when the public grasps the idea that the proposals coming from the other side are absurd. I thought that was an interesting remark. Hold on a second. Good morning. You're on the air. Is this Marianne?
It's not. It's Delegate Flaherty.
Oh, Delegate Flaherty. Okay. Well, Delegate Flaherty, we have Jesse Johnson on. He's talking. He's giving us a little bit of a rundown about the historic vote on the cannabis legislation. But I just want to warn you, we're also going to get a call in here from Marianne Davis, who's going to give us about a 3 or 4 minute hit on what's happening in Shepherdstown.
Is that her?
That may be her. Is that her? Oh, did I lose somebody?
Thanks for calling in, Sean. I wasn't sure, but I'm
Jesse.
Glad she's...
Are you back in?
I am.
I'm sorry, man. I hit the wrong button, and it moved Flaherty on and you off. That was a crime. I won't do that again. I hit the wrong button.
On Good Friday, too.
On Good Friday, too. It's like being semi-cruise. Well, I want to ask Jesse, impressive. Go ahead.
It's all good.
Yeah, you know, if there was a way to, Governor Brown's, you know, remark that, you know, you got to prove the other side is just absurd. And what they're saying makes no sense whatsoever. And once ordinary people get that, then they go, "Oh, yeah, that's bull. We're not going to go that direction." Okay. And so, was that the kind of moment that happened this year in the legislature? It just all of a sudden the opposition just appeared absurd, or did you guys do something really different this year that you hadn't done before?
Well, I think it's a little of both, but I think that really what carried that message of the absurd is the onslaught of social media today. It's a new tool that we haven't really had before, though I've been trying to use it since Zuckerberg literally asked me in person in D.C. to join this new thing he had going called Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to use that, you know, for previous campaigns, et cetera. But the problem is that West Virginia has been so isolated. We don't have the broadband and mm-hmm. the services that we should have. And frankly, neither does this country.
Yeah.
In comparison to many other countries in the world. But now the proliferation of cell phones has really changed that. And the ability for people to communicate in the hills and hollers of West Virginia has changed dramatically.
Mm.
And people are more accessible and more involved and more educated because they can now, Google mm-hmm. any of these issues pertaining to, you know, whether it's really a medicine or not, no matter what kind of, you know, press that the powers that be have been able to control and muster for years and years, saying that it's Schedule One, that it has no medicinal value, even though, you know, the federal government has patents on it as medicine, Marinol, et cetera. All of those became absurd points, and I think that the public, you know, reached critical mass, and so they turned out.
Right.
And it was admitted on the floor of the House, and Flaherty can attest to that, you know, that everyone was, every member said that they were getting, you know, over 100 calls. And,
wow.
And that even though the leadership was adamantly against it and would kill the bill if they could, that the people unquestionably were demanding that now is the time.
Right.
I got a question for Sean. The 100 calls.
Why don't you introduce him a little bit first?
Again? Yeah, Sean Flaherty is the delegate from Wheeling, the Northern Panhandle, and we're glad to have him on the Labor Beat today. And to get back to the conversation there, Sean, the 100 calls, is that something we could utilize against the Republicans to make them come to their senses on this budget?
Well, you know, I think a lot of those calls are from their own people, as opposed to when we're trying to, in other views and other issues, it doesn't necessarily come from their own crowd, you know.
Right.
We had them on the hook in the reclassification amendment that I introduced on the floor that was voted down, but they're on the hook for a vote against medical marijuana. And then after that happened, they were just bombarded with phone calls. A lot of those phone calls are from their own people. What I mean by that is, I personally get a lot of messages from veterans. And that, historically, is a very big GOP constituency that was simply calling their leadership and saying, what the hell are you doing?
Good.
So, you know, I think that was a great way to go about it, because we had them on the hook on the House side on a vote already, and then you had all the members saying, okay, we need to right this wrong. How can we do it? Well, it ended up happening through the motion to discharge the bill that was passed out of the Senate. I mean, make no mistake about it, leadership would not have run that bill.
Right.
We had to use a motion to discharge to get it to the floor.
That's right.
And what is that? What is the motion to discharge? What, explain, I mean, just a little bit for our listeners.
Okay, so how this works, and Jesse touched on the fact that the Senate passed out their version of medical marijuana. Now, the House version, 2677, that was Delica Pushkin was the lead sponsor of, and I was the co-sponsor, was a very good medical marijuana bill. It was triple reference, meaning that it had zero chance of ever making out of committee and going to the House floor because Speaker Armstead didn't want to see it pass.
That's right.
So the Senate bill comes over after it passes overwhelmingly out of the Senate, and it comes to the House. Typically, it would be assigned to committee. Now, we knew that Speaker Armstead would never allow it to come out of committee. So he would assign it, for instance, to two or three committees, a couple of which would probably not even meet again the rest of the session. So instead of allowing it to go to committee on first reading, Delegate Folk made a motion to discharge from committee that Senate bill. And what that does, it dispenses it from the committee process, and it has to be voted on.
Yeah.
So then we had what I call our second medical marijuana vote, was actually the vote to discharge the bill from committee, which passed.
That was brilliant. That was
passing,
brilliant.
It took it to the House floor.
That was great.
Interesting.
Are we supposed to like Delegate Folk now?
I'm sorry, you're going to have to find someone else to do that.
You know, at least we always, I think a lot of members of the legislature have situational principles. At least when it comes to Liberty Caucus, I know where these guys stand before the issue even comes up, and
right.
I respect that. Now, do I agree with everything? Not so much, but,
right.
you know, I at least respect principles and people who are willing to go to bat for them, even when it's not politically popular. So, you know, I'm not going to say anything bad in regards to the Liberty Caucus. Not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just wish.
I can't be the same. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, the thing, you've got to take the good with the bad, right?
With Delegate Folk? I'm sorry. He's a horse's ass to me, okay?
Right. And
every time I've talked to him, he's
right.
a horse's ass.
And
so
you can say that on this radio because we're not FAA regulated or FCC regulated.
Uh-oh.
We're in the internet.
You can actually call somebody a horse's ass unregulated thing. Yes, you can.
You could?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you can do that.
That's right. ASS is not a bad word.
You can't. You can't use.
Right.
You can't actually say you saw them having sex with a goat. You know, unless it's true. Okay.
You saw the smile on the goat's face.
Yeah.
The goat was not abused.
That's like.
Yeah.
You know, you're not supposed, you know, we, of course, on the radio, you can't Photoshop photos, you know, things like that. You have to, you'd have to put together some kind of audio barnyard thing, you know,
right.
to get the same effect.
So, Sean, how's Wheeling? How's everything up there? Your constituents welcome you back with open arms?
Oh, absolutely. It's good to be home. I can tell you that much. Two and a half months in complete chaos down there in Charleston. Glad to be around some normal people again. Being, you know, hidden in that damn dome with no light for hours and hours and hours and sitting in Judiciary Committee, it's good to be back.
All right.
Well, so what do you, now, what's your prediction? Jesse has indicated he thinks it's going to go to, and Ted Bettner earlier this morning was on and thinks it's going to go to a special session and then maybe even a showdown and later on. What you have any sense of where it might end up or where we're going?
I agree with that assessment. I think you're going to have a lot of issues on the House side when it comes to getting on board with anything, because it's basically controlled by leadership ideology, not necessarily facts. Facts going to die in the House, it seems to be, to me anyway. Mm. And it's going to be a real showdown. That's why I think that's why you're seeing the governor just being so outspoken, out in front. Have you seen a governor so out front of a budget issue like Governor Justice has been?
No.
I mean, I haven't
no.
been doing this a long time.
No.
But I can tell you, under the Tomlin administration, I don't recall him ever being out in front
Never.
Of a budget like Justice has.
No, he was hiding. Tomlin.
He didn't like to get in front of the public.
No, he was not. He was very private,
right.
And, which is weird because he was in the legislature for 20-some years.
Has John Doyle lost his job yet?
No, he did lose his job, yes.
I mean,
with the tax department.
So he's home now.
Right. He should be home. Yeah, we should get him home.
I mean, he was getting, yeah. We got to get him on. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He's
the last time I saw him was last week. They had a press conference for the war on water.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was there?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You mean downtown, down in Charleston?
No, yeah, they had a press conference, and he was there. He got a job working for one of the groups that was opposing all these attacks on our water quality.
Oh, so he's still down there?
Well, he's not there now. It's over now.
Well, okay.
So he could be home, or he could be...
Was he doing West Virginia Rivers or one of those?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was helping out.
Well, they're a good outfit.
He was helping out several groups.
Angie Rosser, yeah. Very, very smart lady. Yeah.
They had a wonderful press conference. And you might elaborate on that a little bit too, Sean, your opinion of what the Republicans did to water quality in West Virginia.
Well, I believe it was House Bill 2506, which basically changed the way we measure our water quality standards by going to the harmonic flow, which basically if there is a low flow, in my analysis, and I'm no expert on this, but I try to get as educated as I can, during a low flow period, our ability to measure will now be decreased as far as knowing non-carcinogens, things like lead in the water that we saw in Flint, Michigan. Our ability to measure that now is greatly reduced compared to years past when we use a different flow pattern. So, you know, it was a bill that I was very vocal about because I learned about it in committee listening to Mr. Hansen talk about it, who knows more than anybody on this radio show about about the environmental issues impacted. But, you know, it just goes to show that our state continues to be bought and sold by big industry.
That's it.
And that bill in particular was a big industry bill.
Yep.
When they brought in the representative from the Manufacturers Association, I asked point blank in committee, how many jobs are going to be added, and can you tell me how they're going to be added? And the answer is none, because they don't know. And it's just purely for the pockets of big companies and big industry in the state of West Virginia. We're just repeating history.
Yeah. Well, okay, so...
And that's not a bill that the governor would veto, because he's in the coal business.
Correct. Yeah, but I mean... this.
He wants to see...
I think what happens
regulations is, that regulate his industry taken away.
But here's what I think happens. Okay, I think, you know, a news story breaks like Flint. Okay, and then you find other news stories. By the way, that if you went out and inspected the pipes in half the American old American industrial cities, you'd find a similar issue, right?
Right.
And I think there's a bunch of people when they see a news story that way, their first goal is not how we save lives, but how we avoid paying for that disaster. Okay, mm-hmm. And let's start changing the regulations right now. So whenever they find out that we've murdered, you know, 10,000 people by neglect over the years, that we don't get charged for it.
Cover your tracks.
You know, I think that's what and then they get the consultants right away going.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just
That's a great point. West Virginia pays for this. Whenever there's an environmental disaster, it's the taxpayer that pays for it.
Right. And, you know, I'm glad I have both of you guys on here because you both can speak to this opioid crisis that we have and the fact that our attorney general is just absent. He's vacant. You know, he's not doing anything to bring in some money from the drug companies that are the wholesalers or... There's another group that's kind of an intermediary group that actually supplies the drugs to the states. I can't remember the name of it, but they're not the manufacturers. They're the ones that distribute the medicine, so-called medicine. And then we know that marijuana would help the opioid crisis based on what it's done in other states. Washington and Colorado, to be sure, and several other states, California, and
actually all the states that have passed medical cannabis in the first year have on mean a 27% reduction in opioid related death.
Wow.
Yeah,
and they're never going to investigate the attorney general, his lack of due diligence on this. I mean, he's absent. His wife is a lobbyist for the drug manufacturers, and you know, he doesn't want to ruffle her feathers. She probably doesn't even live in West Virginia.
Well,
she probably lives in D.C., right?
Well, Melanomia doesn't live in the White House.
Right, Manchin lives in D.C. on a boat. He lives on a boat, man. Hey, Sean, we ought to go down there sometime and do a little recon, you know?
Was it in D.C.?
Yeah,
in
yeah.
Maryland, where...
He could be in Maryland, but
he's down there at Foggy Bottom on one of those houseboats down there.
I think Virginia owns the river. I'm not sure.
It does.
It does down there.
Well, Maryland owns it up here.
Right.
I don't know who owns it down there. Okay.
But it's across from Virginia. But okay. I'm not sure if they own it or not.
I don't know.
But you know, and they have all these town hall meetings. You know, people are outraged, and you know, we had one here, I think, at Musselman High, but it wasn't Joe Manchin in person. It was Joe Manchin via Skype.
No, he appeared at one town hall here.
I think he was at Parkersburg the other night.
Did he? Right? Okay, good.
He was going to give everybody a job, according to the ad. Job fair. It was a job fair. And you come and get a job. Did anybody go to that? What happened there?
In,
I don't know.
In Parkersburg?
Well, it's just, you know.
They go over to Ohio to work.
I just wondered how... Yeah, have a big job fair. Joe Manchin, jobs, jobs, jobs. Then you go there. I mean, how many employers showed up to hire people? I mean, I just wondered how that.
Well, that's the thing about the cannabis bill. You know, we've opened Pandora's box for a variety of new industries to come, you know, and pop up in West Virginia. You need to strengthen it so that it's more focused on homegrown industry in West Virginia, as opposed to, you know,
right,
big business coming in, big pharma, big ag, et cetera.
Well, or big tobacco comes in with all, will supply all your marijuana types, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Well, you know, Jesse's right. This can be an economic savior for us in many areas, but the only way you're truly going to save West Virginia's economy is through net migration to West Virginia.
Exactly.
We have an old state where people are dying and young people are leaving. The only way you're going to save our economy is by incentivizing people to come back,
that's
or
right.
move. And that's what's happening in Colorado and Washington, is you're getting net migration to the state, and it's causing a boom in the economies there.
Mm-hmm.
We have, you know, an outward migration. Everybody's leaving.
Yeah.
The only way to save our economy is by getting people here, and that's just one of the ways to do it. We need to take full opportunity to about it. You know, on the House floor in the marijuana debate, we always heard, well, we got to just put our toe in the water. Don't jump in. We don't want to turn out like Colorado. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? Having the best economy in the entire country? I'd love to turn out like Colorado.
Yeah, I don't want to turn out like that. Oh, no, yeah. I know. I don't want to turn out like California. Oh, no.
You have to consider their information stream, and theirs was quite starkly different than ours. And
that's interesting.
You know, when Schott got up and stated statistics that had nothing to do with medical cannabis and everything to do with, you know, what we would call recreational. You know, but the real answer to this, and hopefully the governor will see that and he will revisit this in a way that is groundbreaking for West Virginia, not only to repair the parts of the bill, the Schott bill, that are woefully inaccurate or insufficient, but also you know, the ability to change our economy is enormous, and he knows, and he focuses on the fact that, and has publicly, that you know, this is a tourism mecca. West Virginia has the potential to be an absolute tourism mecca, and what we have to do is we've got to set those standards, like the water quality standards, like the opportunities for new businesses to flourish here and to bring people to our state. As Sean was pointing out, this is an enormous opportunity for the state of West Virginia, right here, right now, at a time that has never seen greater need for the state of West Virginia. So I think that, you know, perhaps the governor really might want to look at changing this and looking at cannabis tourism, the opportunities are it's just
huge.
It's mind-boggling what is going to happen right now. And everyone's talking about it. Everyone was talking about it at the Capitol, and everyone is talking about it across the breakfast table. And the need is so severe. And now's the time.
All right, man. I think now is the time.
You got the last word there, Jess. Hey, thanks for calling in on Labor Beat today. This show will be podcast
by tomorrow
at some point.
And so you send me all the email. Make sure I have all the email addresses. I'll make sure everybody gets
a copy. You can visit the
Labor Beat. It'll be straight up on Labor Beat Facebook as well as on my blog.
Exactly. Yeah, you can share it from there. Yeah. And really appreciate having you both on. You're both well respected.
And congratulations.
And hardworking. Hard working,
and,
guys.
And putting through all that. I mean, the citizen legislature, we thank you guys for your service and for everything you've been doing. Okay, it's obviously a tough road. And
appreciate the time, guys. You guys have a great weekend.
Hey, I'm going to see you up in Wheeling in August, Sean. Yeah, for the Blues Fest, man.
All right, let's have a drink.
All right,
Taj Mahal and Mo is coming on the Friday night, I believe.
All right,
yeah,
hey, we do it big here, Wheeling. We
I love
do
it.
The festivals.
That's one of the best I've ever been to, for sure. Thanks a lot, man.
Always known how to do the music in Wheeling.
That's right. There
that's
you
right.
go.
All right, man.
Thanks a lot,
you guys.
Happy Easter.
All right, guys.
Happy
care.
Easter.
Bye bye. All right.
Oh, well, what a show, man.
Well, take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next. All right. So we'll be back here on Monday. By the way, later today, I got what's going on here. I call it Wonk City. I'm going to play some mainly academic kind of analysis on politics and the economy. And then later this afternoon, we're going to have Geek City. We're going to have a little bit of a gaming and tech podcast going on. Tomorrow is old time radio all day on Saturday, and on Sunday morning is Quaker radio. We're going to do a little bit of theology, and I guess we're going to call it an Easter sunrise program. All right, we'll be back.